the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Sports app. Listen to OTB Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts, including OTB Gold.
Are you a complete rookie?
The OTB Sports app. Available to download now from your app store.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Okay, welcome back. So, Champions League has taken shape and not in the way we might have all predicted. We have Kenny Cunningham with us. Good afternoon.
Evening, Joe.
No, it's still afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, Kenny. Come on. Are you walking around saying good evening to people, are you?
Well, days, nights, just morph into one. Just morph into one, honestly.
So, Raheem Sterling last night, I'm just glancing down, we've just finished the paper review here, so he's in all the back pages, and there's that weird moment where he's sitting on the ground and almost looking around in complete disbelief because he can't quite figure out how what's happened has happened. And little does he know, 60 seconds later, Leon are about to score again. It was a mad minute of sport at its most unpredictable and crazy and bizarre.
Yeah, it was like, but I wouldn't get too fixated on the miss. Yeah, it was a bad miss. He should have scored, but Manchester City's problems were, that was a big miss.
Yeah.
It was interesting actually listening to Gary Lineker speak about it.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, getting a striker's perspective in terms of the technique which he used. He was just there. He was pretty clear that he just tried to put too much force behind the ball. He said he should have been almost trying to decelerate his contact as he hit the ball. So if he scuffed it, it still would have been enough power to take it into the goal.
Yeah.
By actually trying to strike it as hard, as firm as he did, he brought in the very small percentage, that little bobble, and it could have taken it off the crossbar. So either way, of course, it was a miss. But Manchester City's problems are much more fundamental than that in the evening. They didn't lose that game of football because of Raheem Sterling's miss. It was just a tactical setup of the team. I'm still scratching my head this morning in terms of how Guardiola set the team up. I just don't understand. I don't know what he was thinking. It made no sense whatsoever, and ultimately it's cost his team.
So for someone who didn't catch the game potentially listening and they've heard Guardiola's tactics being slammed, how did he set the team up and then how did it play across the first hour or so?
Well, he reverted back to a kind of 3-4-3 formation. I mean, he tinkered with it, Joe, against Real Madrid in both legs, and I didn't understand it then either, to be honest with you. He went to the Bernabeu and he played Bernardo Silva as a striker. People call it a false nine, but as a central striker predominantly. De Bruyne played as a number 10 that night, and Jesus played on the left wing. I couldn't understand it. They won the game 2-1 and he was lauded, like, you know, genius type thing. But it was a great result, don't get me wrong. The team played well. But even after that result, I looked at the game that night, I looked back on it, and I still couldn't understand why Jesus was playing the left wing and Bernardo Silva up front. I didn't see the advantage. I looked at the performance, I analysed it, and for me, there was an argument there to be made that City would have won more emphatically with Jesus as a central striker and Bernardo Silva as a left winger in a more comfortable position, in a position which both are familiar with and can actually excel in. So I didn't quite understand that. Went back to the Etihad a couple of weeks ago, and he did the same. He played Foden as a central striker and Jesus on the left wing again. And I think variably after the game, he might have admitted to it, look, it might have been a mistake to play Foden there. But again, it was like, it was a strange decision. I was thinking, why did he play an orthodox central midfielder and Foden? Versatile as he is, he's played off the right wing, I know, on occasion since he's been in the team. Why do you play him as a central striker when he doesn't clearly understand the position? He hasn't been brought up there, hasn't been schooled in the position, and plays Jesus again, who's a natural number nine, instinctive striker, makes good runs in behind, you know, instinctive in around the box, and you throw him on the left wing again. But again, they won the game, so it seemed as if a bit churlish making the argument that, well, I don't understand what he's doing. So I would have put every penny, every cent I own last night, Joe, on Guardiola setting up his team, as he always predominantly has done, when they've played at their very best, at their most balanced and most dangerous, 4-3-3. Simple as that. That three in midfield, you could argue Fernandinho or Rodri at the base of midfield, and then De Bruyne at David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Foden centre midfield. But that middle three axis, that's the real creative hub of the team, Joe. That's what blows teams away. That little kind of inverted triangle in midfield where they play those little combinations, get through the third, and then link up that front three, the likes of traditionally David Silva and De Bruyne, within touching distance of that front three and being able to play clever little combinations, slide people in. Again, you could argue what the front three would be. But that had to be the way forward. It had to be the way he played last night. I would have laughed at anybody who suggested that he would have deviated away from that last night, which is what he did. He went to 3-4-3. He brought in an extra defender, Fernandinho, Garcia and Laporte. And again, I just don't understand. Yeah, I heard him after the game saying he was concerned about the Lyon front two. And they're decent front two, and Camby's very quick, obviously. De Pay not so much, although he's a good all-round player. And it was as if he was making the argument that he needed to play a back three. He needed to change the whole formation of the team, the whole dynamic, change that creative hub in midfield, because he went with a flat two then. Because he went with a back three, he sacrificed that middle three. He went with Rodri and Gundogan in midfield. So you lost that creative spark just to get that extra central defender in. And I was thinking, I just didn't understand. I thought, well, if you're not happy playing 2v2 against these two relatively, you know, decent strikers, you don't need to go to a back three. All you have to do is kind of modify your approach slightly. Even in a back four, Joe, you don't have to play back 2v2 with a back four. All you do is when you send one of your fullbacks up the pitch, you ask your other fullback to slide across and make sure you play 3v2. Now, one of your fullbacks in your two centre halves, so give yourself an extra man. That's all you do. It's a slight modification. Don't commit your two fullbacks as high up the pitch and leave your two centre halves. So you haven't got a huge amount of confidence in 2v2. You don't have to change the whole dynamic of the team to do that. Yeah. All you do is you say to Cancelo or Cole Walker, listen, the ball's on one side of the pitch. Rather than make the pitch as big as possible and get yourself as high up the pitch, you get yourself back around on the cover, get yourself in contact with your centre half, and just give us that additional player in the defensive area if you're worried about the opposition too.
Sorry to interrupt. He's done that at times. I mean, we've seen him do that where the fullbacks have played more conservatively against Liverpool at times. So it's not like he's unaware this is a very obvious option to him, which makes it stranger again. So as you said, Fernandinho, Garcia, Laporte are their three centre-backs. Then it's Walker, Rodri, Gundogan, Cancelo, and it's De Bruyne, Jesus and Sterling. That's how he went at this. Like Lyon are seventh in Ligue 1. They've lost 9 of 26 games in the French League. If Guardiola was coming up against seventh in the Premier League, they would just go out and impose themselves and play their game and win. I mean, the suggestion is that, be it a nervousness on his part or some issue on his part, he is overthinking these games. Yeah. He is attributing some level of importance to them, which he feels he has to respond to with some ingenious tactical coup for the night. And he's, I would say, bemusing his team. I would say the players are looking around and thinking to themselves, why this? Why are we doing this? We don't need to do this against Lyon.
I agree with you. I think the fact when he started talking about that team shape, whether it's the day before the game with the players, a couple of those players, the more experienced players, would have been scratching their head. I got a sense of that off Kevin De Bruyne being interviewed after the game. He wouldn't come out verbally and say it. He talked about maybe not being ourselves, Joe, in that first half, not passing the ball like we can. But the reason why they didn't pass the ball, because they didn't have those little patterns, those players in those areas of the pitch where they usually get those little combinations going. De Bruyne was kind of playing a floating role as a front three, in one of the front three. So he's playing a little bit higher up the pitch. Now, he's more dependent on people further down getting the ball and feeding him the ball. But he's looking down the pitch. He's got Gundogan and Rodri pretty much passing sideways and backwards for the majority of that first half. So he's getting kind of starved of possession. He should be the one in that central area, dropping a little bit deep in his natural position and actually dictating the play. And you've mentioned the Lyon team. Lyon were always going to play 3-5-2. It's predominantly how they've played. We saw the Juventus games, you would have seen it. Very impressive, actually, out of possession. Now, very compact, not highly unusual, Joe, but very compact out of possession. Drop kind of low block of time to look to hit you on the counter attack, albeit they have some clever footballers. So, how are you going to break that down, that kind of system down, that kind of back five? They drop into a back five. Well, first and foremost, I'd say, well, can you get people in the team who can beat people in 1v1, beat them in 1v1 situations? So you look at your wide men. So who've we got there? You've got Kevin De Bruyne playing in a half-cocked wide right position. and you're thinking, well, Kevin De Bruyne, to be fair to him, as brilliant as he is, he's not going to beat too many people in 1v1 situations. So immediately you sacrifice the likes of Mahrez in that right side of midfield position. You can go and beat people in 1v1. Albeit you had that with Sterling on the left-hand side. Sterling was the best outlet down that kind of inside left channel. So that's one option. Had he got enough of those players, individually can beat people in 1v1 situations, and he hadn't by leaving Mahrez, Bernardo Silva, etc., on the bench. Then you think, well, how else do you get through it? Tight, compact defensive shape. Have you got people in central areas who can actually play in tight areas, play little combinations, 1-2s around the corner, killer passes, Ivan Needle kind of passes? Have you got those players, the David Silvers, De Bruyne predominantly, in the area of the pitch who can actually break that defensive block by the quality of their passing, their awareness, the high quality technique which they have? And no, they didn't. He sacrificed that as well by putting Rodri and Gundogan in there, who are competent enough on the ball, Joe. But when the pressure comes, the squeeze comes in those areas, invariably end up playing that ball sideways and just keep possession of the football. So that's what I'm saying. Even looking at that Leon, people said, oh, he was too respectful of that Leon team. For me, it was the wrong thing. Looking at that Leon team and seeing what they're good at, he set the team up the wrong way. Anyway, the only way to break that team down was to play his orthodox 4-3-3, get two natural wingers in the team who could stretch him wide and actually beat people in wide areas, and get that real creative hub in that central area of the pitch. Take your pick, David Silva, Bernardo Silva, definitely De Bruyne, and then another potentially. And so he can attack it from both, as good as they are and as sound, as solid defensively as they are. Actually, that's the way forward. And from the defensive point of view, to counteract that attacking football, the pace of it can be on the counter-attack, just be a little bit conservative like we spoke about in terms of how you send your full-backs into forward areas of the pitch. Just put the brakes on one of them and make sure you've always got that spare defender at the back, giving a little bit of extra defensive cover. So that was the small kind of modification, only a small tweak which needed to be made, not certainly the kind of massive overhaul which we saw last night. And I think you're right. And I think the players sensed that, the experienced players in particular, would have lost a bit of confidence when they saw that team sheet being put up. And that's exactly how it panned out for the first, certainly half an hour, 45 minutes of that game. It was pretty awful stuff from City.
So I speculated when I said, is there a degree of nerviness about Guardiola at this stage of the competition, or does he want it too much, or is he attributing too much importance to these games where he feels he has to respond somehow? Again, we don't know. We're not inside his head. But what would be your guess as to what's going on when he's approaching these knockout Champions League games?
Yeah, I mean, I think desperation. I wouldn't beat him up on that, Joe, in terms of actually he's desperate to win this competition. He's ambitious. I think there's a certain level of pressure there. Is as lauded as he is, and rightly so, he's a brilliant coach, kind of motivator, et cetera, but he must feel a little bit of pressure. The kind of suggestion, the criticism that he hasn't won that Champions League for quite some time. And the reason why, of course, he won out was so successful at Barcelona was really more dependent on the players he had available to him, the world-class individual talents, Iniesta and Xavi here, Messi in particular I'm talking about, and they were the driving force. They were the people actually brought that those trophies to Barcelona, rather than maybe his brilliance as a manager. He had the opportunity to kind of confound that at Bayern Munich and the last couple of years at Manchester City, and the amount of funds that he's had at his disposal, and he hasn't been able to do it. So that criticism is going to grow and grow. Those whispers, maybe, John, maybe not outright criticism, but those whispers are going to grow. Do you know what? He's not quite as good as people think or are saying. And they'll back this up constantly with the lack of success he's had since he's left Barcelona. When they won that last Champions League. So I think there's a little bit of that in the back of his head, which you can understand. A real fierce determination to prove those critics wrong. And it's him really fundamentally that was driving all that success. So I think there might be a little bit of that desperation, but where there's a bit of ego in there as well, Joe, we'll never know that. I don't know him well enough. You know, he has changed ever so slightly since he's been the football club, in terms of the tactical setup. Now and again, people go, oh, this blows me away. Well, look what he's doing here. We've never seen this before. This is groundbreaking stuff. This lad's a genius. He's the messiah. So whether that feeds into the ego a little bit, Joe, I don't know. So when this big game comes along, all of a sudden, for me, don't touch it. Yeah. You don't need to touch it. Just roll the machine out. Just roll them out and let them take care of business. For the reasons that I'm saying, he just thinks, no, I've got something else. I want to try something else. So whether that's almost a subconscious thing that at the end of the game, he wants to be portrayed as he was the Real Madrid games, Joe, home and away. Oh, genius. Nobody saw that. Jesus on the left wing. Oh, that was amazing. And he pulled it off. I didn't think he pulled it off for the reasons that I said. They won the game fairly and squarely, but it wasn't for those tactical changes which he made. And certainly last night, it just kind of absolutely blew up in his face.
It's funny you say that about the Madrid game, because we did the Champions League night in here and Damien Delaney was in studio watching it. And even just chatting to him off air, as well as on air, he was saying it on air as well. He didn't like the Jesus on the left wing move either. He thought it was too clever by half. But as City were getting a foothold in the game and going on to win the game, he was already saying, oh, and listen, we're going to Pep masterclass this, Pep masterclass that. And the result was dictating too much of the analysis of that game. He thought, this is just, again, whether it's ego or overthinking or, you know, succumbing to the pressure, this is unnecessary. Like, you've spent day in, day out, how many weeks and months drilling this team to express themselves in a certain formation. They're instantly comfortable with it. And then 2-3 days, I think he said to Guardiola, 3 days before the game, they started working on this shape. And, you know, it's even hard to, like, how do you think he imagined it working? What do you think he envisaged was going to happen when they got the ball?
Now, I suppose that's my point. I don't know.
Okay.
I find it very difficult. The way Leon set up, we knew how they were going to set up. I find it very difficult to make even an argument as to why this system would have counteracted what Leon were doing. I mean, generally, when you play against a 3-5-2 system, as Leon did, they're very strong down the middle of the pitch. You play with three centre midfielders, nice and narrow. They've got a front two, play 15 yards from each other. So really, the spaces, Joe, are down the sides. If you're looking to make an argument, how can you get through a kind of 3-5-2 with wing-backs? The argument is always down the sides. Can you get overloads down the sides? Can you get a formation on the pitch where you can get little overloads and maybe 2v1 against the opposition wing-backs, on this occasion, Cornet and Dubois? So really, the kind of Man City's orthodox 4-3-3 formation lends itself to that, because you've got the natural width in the team. Say you would have started with Sterling left, Mahrez on the right-hand side. You got your two full-backs, whether it's Walker, albeit I'm saying maybe play a little bit conservative, but when the ball's on that side of the pitch, Walker gets himself involved, the other fullback gets himself in the cover. So you got fullback and winger raiding down that side of the pitch against an opposition wingback, Joe. So there's almost a little 2v1. The opposition team have to drag a central midfielder out quickly from that central area to double up 2v2, or potentially at times one of those three centre-halves have to come out. But if you move the ball quickly and get quick switches of play, that's not necessarily easy to do, to get those players out to double up. So that's the kind of way in, predominantly against a 3-5-2, overloads and get that extra man down the side of the pitch. But again, City last night, they didn't do that. They actually matched up. They went wing-back to wing-back, and they played like a narrow three. De Bruyne played on the inside, so you didn't get those overloads. Last night, you got Cancelo up against Dubois 1v1, and you got Kyle Walker up against Cornet, two rapid athletes, absolutely decent little contest. Cancelo, for me, more of a natural defender. So they couldn't break them down the sides, Joe. It was kind of a bit of a matchup down the sides. And in the centre of the pitch, if anything, they had a little bit of the overload in there, Leon. They had those three midfielders nice and tight in there, Kakere, Uar, and Guimarães, the Brazilian boy. So it was difficult for City to actually get any kind of overloads in there. So I suppose the point I was trying to make, I can't really make an argument for how he saw Guardiola in terms of how this system was actually going to break down, where they were going to get the overloads and where they were going to get the advantage in any area of the pitch.
Okay, well, that makes it doubly worse then. Where does this leave Guardiola's stock, in your view, as a manager?
I think he's going to get criticism. I think that's an absolute fact. For the if I'm saying that last night, everybody's seen it. You know what I mean? Anybody watch the game of football and kind of break it down can see what happened last night. So he's going to have to deal with it. But I mean, there was other things going on at play last night. So we've spoken about the tackle setup of the team, Joe. But in terms of how Manchester City defend, how they defended, say the first goal last night.
Yeah.
So. Ball over the top, Leon player in possession of the ball, head up, no pressure on the ball, ball clipped over the top and they're opened up. So for me, that defensive high line is quite topical at the moment, because we'll see it again with Bayern Munich, a bit of criticism then. They did the same, high line, no pressure on the ball, take huge risks with that. And a number of teams actually do it. And it's regardless of whether you play a back four, it doesn't really matter, or a back five. I mean, Guardiola spoke about being more secure having the third man back there. That's not always the case. In a general point, I was never particularly more secure when I played in the back three than I did when I played in the back four. If anything, I was more secure in narrow, compact back four than I was in the back three. Having the extra central defender in this didn't make me more secure defensively, because what happens, your fullbacks get pulled up the pitch, your back three gets spread across the pitch, bigger distance between defenders, you get kind of more exposed. But whether you play a back three or a back four, that first goal last night wasn't down to City playing with a back three. It was down to bad defending, basic defending, full stop. When an opposition player 10 yards from the halfway line, 15 yards, is in possession, has got his head up, you don't hold a position close to the halfway line. Alarm bells are ringing. As defenders, you head back to your penalty box as quickly as possible and make sure you're not hurt by a ball in behind. The only ball you give up is a ball into the centre forward's feet in front of you, where you can go and press. And that's what they didn't do. They kept the high line last night. Laporta's hand in the air, appealing for offside. Young Garcia's kind of trying to plant his feet, trying to force an offside. So again, for me, that's like defensive training. What kind of defensive training are they being taught at the football club? When they're being asked, they're being preached to keep that high line, which I agree with in principle, to keep in the high line, every defender does. Mm. But not when the opposition team are in comfortable possession and the man in possession has got his head up and the ability to pick out a pass.
And I would think just instinctively, even people listening who are playing at a lower, much, 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 much lower level, Kenny, would listen and imagine that scenario where there's a ball being clipped under no pressure. And if you're in that back line, instinctively, you're going to start heading towards your own goal because you know something's potentially on here. I mean, to try and play offside or to plant your feet, you're just leaving yourself open to be dead in the water. And then less important, because it's less of a structural thing and maybe more of an attitude thing, but I mean, Cornet ultimately was side by side with Walker. In fact, he would, by definition, have had to have been behind him because Walker played everyone on side. So Walker just jogs back towards his own goal. Like, there's not even that instinct in Walker to say, you know, Garcia's running back, there might be a tackle here, I could be needed. I mean, if nothing else, I'm going to put the head down and get back towards goal. He trots back and Cornet outruns him and the ball falls to Cornet. And then, you know, something in Walker kind of comes to life and he, you know, sprints 5 yards and it's way too late. So you're kind of looking at that and you are saying, well, Guardiola, I get that your genius is in making a team hum and do actually the harder aspect of the game. But there is something fundamentally wrong with that back line and that defending all round.
Yeah. So I think it's a good point. So you're moving the conversation now. Now you're talking about recruitment of actually defensive players. Who's responsibility? Who's brought those players into the football club? And again, this is another criticism which you can lend to Guardiola. He's got to take responsibility for every single player that's come into that football club. He's one of the very few managers that dictates who comes in, who he wants, and he gets them. So all of those how long has he been in that football club, Joe? I can't even remember the number of years that he's been there. He still hasn't been able to put a central defensive partnership on the pitch that you can hang your hat on. The amount of players that have come into that football club, Mangala, the money spent, Otamendi, John Stones, who just haven't developed. Where is their individual attributes? Whether they haven't been coached or schooled? We hear a lot about in terms of the creative hub of the team, the element, how they've improved and kind of blossomed under Guardiola, Raheem Sterling, etc., etc., etc. But I tell you what, I haven't seen that blossoming in terms of some of the defenders who have come into the football club. I haven't seen them defensively improve. John Stones is probably the best example of that. You've mentioned Kyle Walker. I've been hearing stuff, Kyle Walker, brilliant, he's outstanding, how he boom, boom, boom. Going forward, yeah, absolutely great athlete. But he's never been the best defender. He came to Manchester City Football Club as probably an average defender and outstanding attacking fullback. That was his criteria when he came to the football club. And at the moment, he's still the same. He's still a bang average defender and a very good attacking fullback. He hasn't improved. You mentioned it there. In defensive instincts, the ball goes over your head. Your natural instincts, get back to me penalty box as quickly as possible. I don't know how this attack's going to develop, but I've just got to get back. Your instinct tells you, get back as quickly as possible. So I'm in a position to make a contribution if I'm needed to, you know, whatever it is, a tackle, an interception, whatever it is. But he hasn't got those natural defensive instincts to get back, that natural positional sense to get around his fullback. His decision-making isn't great. And he's another player who's brought into the football club. So I would point the finger criticism at Guardiola in terms of the quality of defenders that he's brought to the football club. It hasn't been good enough. I actually think the best defenders who came to the club were shipped out too quickly. Nastasic, young defender, and Savic actually was very young when he came to the football club. And I actually quite like both of them. I thought, you know what, look, natural defenders, these two kids. They're young, they need to develop, need a bit of time. But in the right environment, I thought, yeah, 2 or 3 years, they'll be the real deal. But they didn't last. Yes. They were shown the door. And Savage actually resurrected his career and done really well playing Atletico Madrid. Really good defender for me. And Stasic went over to Germany and done reasonably well. So I think he has to take criticism for that, Guardiola, in terms of the defenders that he's brought into the football club just haven't been good enough and actually haven't been educated enough. And he hasn't improved them once he's brought them into the door of the football club.
Mm. This is his fourth season. So he did 4 years at Barca, 3 years at Bayern, and now he's back to 4 years at City. So this, if he stays on for another year, this will be the first time he's gone into that fifth year. And the point you make about the improvement we've seen in Sterling versus the defenders, I mean, jumps out as an obvious one. Like, you see how hands-on Guardiola is. We've seen the camera phone footage from different sessions, or him grabbing Sterling and twisting his hips that way and face the play this way and do that, and intricacies that he's spotting and seeing. Like, geez, we're not... What we've just described there, that first goal, I wouldn't even call them intricacies, Kenny. They seem like more basics, you know what I mean? Like, ball over the top when there's no pressure. Go, you know, turn for goal. Or in Walker's case, somewhere over the last 4 years, get back. You know, if there's crisis, if there's trouble back home, you start running back home. Like, so, I don't know. He's either not telling them that, which I'd find really questionable for a manager of that level, or he is telling them that, and for some reason, Raheem Sterling can take messages on board and improve, and the defence can't. And that doesn't make much sense to me either. So I'm at a loss.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he devotes as much time to the defensive side of the game, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, good defending, even really top-quality defender, highest level, Joe, basics, you've mentioned that, it really is the basics,
yeah.
Even at the highest level. I mean, that first goal cost them last night, you know what I mean? This is Champions League quarterfinal, huge, everything on the line. And Manchester United are out because Laporte being on that first goal, breaking it down to the specifics, Laporte being the left side of the three centre-halves, he's looking all the way across the pitch, he can see the Leon player in possession, he can see Garcia, he can see the position of Walker Ferrandino. Ekambi's on his inside making that run. He can see Ekambi's run. So he's the one who can make all those computations in his head very quickly and make the decision. Do I hold the line here or do I drop? He has to drop. 100 times out of 100, you absolutely have to drop. And they're the basics. You're screaming at the young lad inside you, Garcia, who's only 19 years of age. Not only that, you're screaming at him, drop! Drop, and you're dropping as well into the space, so you can see it can be. He's on the far shoulder of Garcia. He can see him. Walker, to be fair to him, that initial ball over the top, Joe, you can't be critical. He doesn't know what's happening behind him. He's closest to the ball.
Yeah.
You're right in terms of his reaction once it goes over his head. But all these things, so you're up and down the pitch together as a defensive unit. Laporte should be screaming at Garcia. Garcia should be dropping off the basis of that. Laporte should be coming across in the cover. He should have a 3-4 yard head start in that can be as quick as he is. And the whole defensive unit should function in that respect. Even worse case, that Cam is an absolute floor and muscles his way in and gets to the ball first. Laporte's on his shoulder. Garcia's recovering back in contact. Walker's on his way back. And then all you're asking your defenders is delay. Mm. Delay tactics. Hold them up. Show them to the touchline. Buys a little bit of time for it. Even midfielders now to get back into a reasonable defensive shape. I mean, that kind of process I'm talking about, that kind of repeats itself 10, 20, 30 times during the course of the game. These are the basics, the fundamentals of defending, whatever level you play at. That's what I learned when I went into international football. Me thinking, I'm not sure I can play at this level. I mean, this is international football. I'm not sure I've got the tools to play at this level. And very quickly I realised, you know, half a dozen caps in, 10 caps in, do you know what? If I just do the fundamentals here that I've been taught, that I've been schooled, that I've learned myself, if I just keep replicating that, making good decisions, doing the right thing, doing the basics, I might be all right here, you know.
But that's
actually but that's all it is.
And you were more than all right. You were stunning. Stunning. I'm kidding. Don't roll your eyes at me. But isn't that the point? Like, defence is about the basics and being a pessimist. Like, I mean, to be a brilliant attacking player is really hard. But if you get in there and you're working well as a team, like, do you suspect maybe on some level Guardiola knows deep down he has never got to grips with the defence, and maybe that explains his team selection? I'll throw an extra body in there, might just shore it up. Just big night like this. Maybe, you know, on some level, Guardiola, self-aware, will know, we haven't mastered this, and maybe that's a thing to do. But then, like, you're asking Garcia, 19 years of age, to slot in beside Laporte and Fernandinho, and what you talked about there is communication. You know, I'd say you and a good partner, well-oiled machine, back four, able to talk to each other. And you were asking a 19-year-old to go in there alongside a backline he's not used to, in a shape they're not used to, and suddenly to communicate brilliantly. So again, that brings us back to the point. Where is Guardiola's stock? We've answered that in quite a long way. Like, can he conceive? Can you call him the best manager in the world when he's producing that kind of stuff?
You can argue that one around the houses, like, you know, who's the best? I mean, how do you qualify who's the best? Because he has the most trophies. Oh, I've never bought into this argument. He's won the most trophies because he's the best. He hasn't won any trophies because he's the worst. Surely we have to look a little bit.
That's what we're doing. We're looking at the performance. So I look at that selection and everything you've discussed there, and I think this isn't just like a slight chink in the armor of this genius. Like, that's a kind of a gaping Achilles heel, no?
I think it is, absolutely. So you look at some of, say, as temporaries around, say the teams we watched, say, the last week. You're talking, say, Manchester United kind of see playing the back three. You look at, watch Inter Milan play the back three this week. Look how they play it. Look how defensively solid. Look how balanced they are. Have a look at their back three. De Vrij is going to play, Bastoni, young Italian, probably Godin. You look how them three play, how they defend as a unit. In fact, how the whole team defend as a unit, going forward and back, how balanced they are. You can see how well-drilled that Inter Milan team are from a defensive point of view. Even Leipzig, to be honest with you. You look at Leipzig, I watched a lot of Leipzig this year as well. When they've gone to a back three this year, Upamecano, Klostermann, Halstenberg on the left-hand side, they function as a unit. And they actually look like national defenders. They actually understand their defensive areas of the pitch, how they function together, good covering positions, positional sense, decision-making, talking. I can even see that in the Leipzig team, how that back three, obviously, throw Angelino into there and the right wing back. But fundamentally, those back three, how they function together, I look at them and think, you know, they're being drilled well. They're being well coached. That Lyon team last night, that back three, absolutely tight back three, you know, compact distances, physically aggressive when they had to be, dropped off, filled it, space, covered each other, didn't get isolated too often. And I thought that was their weakness, Lyon, even before the game. I thought Denier, the right side of the three for me, was a small bit of weakness in terms of mobility. That for me was Manchester City's way in. And with Sterling, and to be fair, they had a bit of joy there in terms of the De Bruyne goal and one or two other situations, Sterling working in that area of the pitch. But they helped each other. You know, they didn't leave them too exposed for the 90 minutes. So the whole defensive unit kind of rallied around each other. Like, you know, if there's any small weakness there, just protect it a little bit. That's what kind of good defenses do. Mm. So there's actually good managers out there. The likes that I've mentioned, the kind of Conte and Nagelsmann, you can see it in their teams, the defensive setup of the team. Wow, this team's well drilled. You can see with Guardiola as an attacking force when they play,
sure,
those rigid patterns of play, how they work the ball up the pitch. But I can see that just as much when I see the likes of those other teams from a defensive point of view. So I think that's where Guardiola has to get the balance. He's got to get, surely there's coaches in there, Arteta was with him for a long period of time, who are having these conversations with him and saying, look, we need to do just as much defensive work, as good as we are offensively, yeah, against the elite footballers, particularly on counter-attack. We've got to find a slight balance here. We've got to find a slight trade-off in terms of how we're committing players up the pitch, and particular full-backs, in terms of giving ourselves a bit more defensive solidity. How do we do that? Are we prepared to do that? Is your ego prepared to do that, to sacrifice a little bit going forward to get a bit more defensive security? PSG are a good example. See them set up the other night. Yeah. Anders Herrera, Idrissa Gueye in centre midfield. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
In the central area of the pitch. I mean, Herrera, a functional player. Idrissa Gueye probably not much more, you know, in that centre of that PSG team. But you know what? They did okay. They didn't vacate their areas, Joe. Yeah. They didn't beat anybody 1v1 situation, play worldly crossfield passes. But they stood in their area of the pitch, stayed behind the ball, kept their shape, squeezed people, made a few tackles, passed runners on, bit of communication. And all of a sudden, you're looking at PSG thinking, you know what? Got a reasonable defensive shape. Mm. They might have a chance this lot.
Yeah.
It counts for a lot. It doesn't seem much when we're talking about it. People are probably switching off, listening to us. Oh my God, it's the most boring conversation I've ever heard on radio. But ultimately, we both know this matters. People who play the game know this really, even at the very highest level,
sure,
these things matter.
No, you've explained it perfectly well. And it's another season. Another season gone, another chance gone. That bunch a year older, Silva gone. And yeah, Guardiola has questions to answer. Before you go, Barcelona.
Oh, I'd rather not talk about it, Joe, to be honest.
Kenny is now going to analyse each of the eight goals with the depth that we just did, the Cornet goal.
I can't talk. I don't know. It's hard to think of an analogy. Like, do you know, I remember once when I was growing up, somebody having dinner. There was a trifle. Was it my ma or somebody? Somebody was walking with a trifle across the floor to the table. Everybody's waiting for this trifle. So anyway, tripped up. The trifle hits the ground. So it's picked up, you know, you pick it up in scoopfuls and you slap it back into the bowl and you come over and you present it, you put it on the table and you're just, everybody's looking into this bowl thinking, oh no, that's a mess. I don't want any part of this. That's kind of how I felt looking at like half an hour into that Barcelona game. It was like, I just don't want any part of this. It was an absolute mess. I didn't even know what I was looking at. I couldn't pick apart Barcelona from a defense. We're talking defensively, from a defensive point of view, that was as bad as I've seen a defense in respect of a defensive setup at the team. It was just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, Joe, and it destroyed the whole game for me. Because you can't talk about Bayern, how good they are, or great attacking play. Some of the Bayern play, forget it. Because when you're up against that ineptitude in terms of a team of defense as badly as that, you can't qualify the merits of the opposition team from an attacking point of view. You just can't. It's that bad. You just, there's nothing to work with there. There really isn't. It literally is what you're looking at. I mean, Bayern, to be fair, I've seen play an awful lot better this season. From an attacking point of view, I've seen them pass the ball a lot better in terms of their quality of pass, and some of their combination play has been far superior to that, what I've seen in the Bundesliga this season. Even defensively, Joe, they're a little bit loose. Mm. Some of the players individually, Alphonso Davies in first hour, probably as poor as I've seen him play. Alaba had a horrible start to the game. Thiago, to be fair, wasn't as, in terms of his passing, wasn't up to the level. So this wasn't like a
vintage.
This wasn't the star performance from Bayern by any shape. Mm. But Barcelona, that was. Don't get me wrong. I've played in some. I played in some games come off the pitch, individual, but collectively from a defensive point of view, we haven't been at it and taken a few beatings, and it's a horrible feeling, Joey. It stays with you. It kind of lingers. But that last that Barcelona performance was. I don't know what the word is. It was absolutely unacceptable. Gerald Piqué gave a performance there the other night where it's almost like you walk out the door of the stadium and you never come back. You don't put your boots back. You just walk. You go home and that's it. You're finished.
Mm.
It struck me a little bit like, remember Gary Neville at West Brom? Remember that game Gary Neville referred to?
Taken off. It was obvious it was over to him and everyone.
And that was it. You know, one of those moments you just think, that's it. Mm. That's how we're looking at Gerald Piqué's performance. It was probably one of the worst individual performances, that level of football, I think I've ever seen. It was absolutely car crash. I couldn't believe it, what I was saying. And I've never been his biggest fan in terms of the defensive side of his game, but it just all fell apart. And that's one of their integral players in the heart of the defence. But it was awful to watch. I did enjoy it. Got to be honest with you. I mean, I'm a big fan of Bayern Munich and what they do, a lovely side, but I couldn't watch that. I really didn't enjoy the game. Because for me, to be talking about a team from an attacking point of view, how good they are, they're creative players, You've got to be able to put an obstacle up against it, you know, in terms of the kind of a team with any kind of defensive setup to kind of qualify how good a team is from an attacking point of view. But Barcelona just didn't do that. They just didn't do that. There was just nothing there to gauge Bayern Munich from. So I was really disappointed in the game. I must admit, it was a massive letdown.
I understand totally. I mean, you need some sense of contest. That's what 900 million. In 5 years has managed to cobble together. Like, they seem to have just made a mess of recruitment. One last point on it, Messi. Damien Delaney was on the show yesterday. He didn't like Messi's body language, felt he threw in the towel quite visibly, and he thought that was really poor from leader of the team and leader of the club. What of his future? I mean, 33 years of age, he's heading towards that tricky period now where he's still the most important player of the club by a distance, and his body is gonna, you know, start to take a little bit on him. So that's a tricky situation to handle for the club. I mean, you don't want to kind of create war with Messi, and you want to keep him, I would think. So you've got that, and then you're looking at, based on what you're saying, I mean, something approaching, not a complete rebuild, but 4, 5, 6 players. Like, they're an aging team. They're all in their 30s now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Messi, of course, is always key. I suppose the only one who'll decide if Messi leaves will be Messi itself, really, John. Such is his stature at that football club. He's an absolute god, isn't he? So even if you wanted to get Messi out, you couldn't really. I would have thought it's the reality of the situation. Only if Messi decides that, you know, I've had enough, I want a different challenge, wherever it is, a different environment. That doesn't seem to be the case. He doesn't say much Messi, Joe, does he? But even the little things you pick up suggest that he doesn't want to necessarily uproot his family and go and have that experience in another country, another kind of challenge. So I don't actually think in the case of, I've spoken about Piqué, for me, he's absolutely, he's finished now. But I don't think that's the case with Messi. I think going forward, there's a bit of transition. I think there's some good for young players there, Joe. I wouldn't totally throw the baby out of the bat. I think he's got some quality talent still at the football club. And I think Messi could play a part in that transition over the next 2 years. You got to get him on board again. You got to get him right between the ears. I'd agree with Damien. He chucked it in last night, but I have a bit of sympathy for him. That's been coming for a long time, Joe. Saw a bit of that at Liverpool the other year when Liverpool turned over. Messi waiting for that reaction from Messi and never came. Mm. So he's not an idiot. He looks around the team and he's seen this drop off some considerable time. So he's not an idiot. But I still think you could utilise him going forward over the next 2 or 3 years, Joe. You got to get the best position for him. You're going to see him, you have been seeing him in a more kind of central role the past couple of years, playing in a front two, really. You know, if you're going to carry somebody out of possession of the body, it's not going to work for you, Joe. It's not too many areas of the pitch, really. You don't want to be doing it in any area of the pitch, to be honest with you. But if there is a position, it's probably that number 10 position, just off the front, off a central striker, you know, with a kind of defensive unit in behind you who'll kind of pick up the slack. So the quality is Messi. That first half, I actually thought he played quite well, Messi, Joe. And if you look at the way he moves over the ground, that kind of turn of pace, his decision making, you know, clinical in front of goal, it's still there. There's still way enough there, Joe, for me. You don't want to be showing him the door. I think the right type of man who comes in, manager, CEO, president, whoever it is, gets him on side. I still think there's a role for him to play. Huge changes around the first team. Absolutely. But I still think Messi's, in terms of his personality, would respect the new manager and would kind of buy into a new manager, president, etc., and would play his part in turning this team around. And it's going to take a little bit of time, maybe over the next couple of years, 2 to 3 years. I still think he's good enough. His physical conditioning is good enough. And certainly his qualities for me are still there in terms of that little burst of acceleration, how he can influence games. I still see that in him, even the game the other evening. So I actually hope he stays there and they build a team around him. And hopefully in kind of 2 or 3 years, we're looking at a new Barcelona team thinking, wow, this is potentially something special. And maybe Messi could play a part in that. But last night was very much the lowest, must have been the lowest of the low from his point of view. But I have a little bit of sympathy, Joe. Could easily be critical of him. And Damien's right, gave the ball away a couple of times, no reaction. That's not good enough. But I can understand there's so much pressure on his shoulders in terms of the produce there. When he looks around and he's not getting his... enough help, the amount of help that he needs to maybe influence the game, a little bit of kind of, you know, frustration, desperation, whatever you want to call it, must creep into your psyche. So I cut him a little bit of slack.
No, I get that. And he's been carrying a lot for quite a while. Publicly, he has said in the last, you know, couple of months as well, that if any team comes at us with intensity, we are a soft touch for them. You know, he's been sounding the warnings even publicly for a while now. Very, 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 very last question. Sevilla, Manchester United this evening. I don't know if you caught their games against Olympiacos or Wolves, but they're more than a decent side. This could be a good game tonight.
Oh, this is the one I've actually been looking forward to. I've got to be honest with you. I think this could be the best game in terms of a contest, including all those Champions League games. I like Sevilla. Really good side. Not too many of those players, Joe. Maybe for generally people who kind of know their football, maybe haven't got a huge knowledge of kind of, you know, European football. Not too many names jump off the team sheet, is there, from the Sevilla point of view. But they're, again, Joe, we're speaking about well-coached team, well-drilled, good balance of the team, attack as a unit, defend as a unit. They're one of those teams, some very good technical players as well. Benega predominantly is the driving force from midfield, some kind of sharp forwards as well, that kind of front three. Mm. So they're a very good side, Joe, they really are. And it'd be a really good test for Manchester United.
People might have seen Reguilón's goal against Rome at the left back. He's very tidy as well. They've lots of little, like, players like that people mightn't have heard, but they're really good.
Oh, they are, Joe. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, there's no real weaknesses in the team. There really isn't. Keep the ball very well. They can keep the ball. It's not a counter-attacking team like Leon. They play possession football. They keep the ball. They dominate you. If you stand off them and let them, they can hit you a kind of counter-attack because Ocampos, got some Nazri. They've got some good forwards higher up the pitch and defensively sound as well. And got a bit of confidence as well, Joe. Play with a little bit of confidence. They finished the season well in La Liga. Got a Champions League spot, you know, top four. So they're finishing the season with confidence. You get a bit of a sense of that. So I'm hoping Manchester United will turn up and see the best of Manchester United this season. Because if they do, I think it'll be an absolute crackerjack of a team. Although I still have a suspicion that Inter Milan, they're the ones I fancy to win it, to be honest with you, right, since the knockout stages. I just feel as if, as I said before, just the way Conte sets up the team, for knockout kind of football. I just think they're perfectly set up into Milan with Martinez and Lukaku up front as well. For me, probably the two most dangerous striking partnership left in the competition. They really are. And that defensive solidity as well probably gives Inter Milan just the edge for me, even over these two teams. But this will be a great game this evening. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, very good. Texting from Mick. Pep just wants to be the smartest man in the room at all times. That's his Achilles heel. Noel says, lads, I'm an Arsenal fan. I knew the writing was on the wall for City when they couldn't beat us in the semi-final of the FA Cup. We weren't pulling up any trees and we beat them handy enough in the end. And then a final one from Tom. Is Kenny watching the snooker? I think you're partial to a bit of snooker. Have you caught the snooker the last few days?
No, I haven't actually, to be honest.
We've been missing out, apparently.
Oh, is that right, yeah?
Apparently, Friday evening semi-finals were extraordinary by all accounts.
Ronnie's still around, is he? I'm guessing he's in the final.
Ronnie's leading the final as we speak.
Wow.
There we are. Listen, brilliant analysis, Kenny. Thanks so much for that. Enjoy the United game tonight.
Yeah, nice one, Joe.
Cheers.
Take care.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. A more electric team up than Salah and Mane. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.